You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the CDC is out with new figures that show no real decrease in the American infant mortality rate since 2011. We'll talk about some of the reasons why and what the problem looks like here in Wisconsin. First, you might not think too much about the things you recycle after you drag them to the curb or haul them to the local collection point. Turns out recycling is not only important for the environment, it's a $100+ billion industry that employs 500,000 people in the U.S. And many manufacturers rely on access to recycled materials to produce high quality and affordable goods. But our next guest says the U.S. lags behind many other countries in our recycling rates, and the industry as a whole is in some trouble. Beth Porter is Green America's Climate and Recycling Director. Beth creates content and resources to help people waste less stuff and improve their recycling habits. Her new book is Reduce, Reuse, Reimagine, Sorting Out the Recycling System. Beth, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, how do we compare to other developed countries, Beth, when it comes to recycling in the United States?
So recycling in the United States is really at a crossroads right now. We've invested a lot in the last few decades to get enthusiasm up, which I would say was very successful. People love to recycle. They love to talk about how much they recycle. But unfortunately, that hasn't been reflected in our overall recycling rate. And I think a lot of that is from confusion, from not understanding our recycling rules of what can and can't be recycled. I think a lot of folks have the question of why? Why are we recycling? Where does it go? So I wanted to try and clear up that confusion to help us increase our recycling rates to what other developed nations are seeing, like, you know, Germany, even Taiwan are at 60% recycling rates, whereas we're hovering at 34%, where we've been stuck for about the last 20 years.
Let's tackle those questions you just brought up. Why do we want to recycle?
Recycling has high environmental benefits and also benefits to communities. So a lot of folks think that we need to recycle to reduce landfill space, which is absolutely true. But we really also need to close that loop. We need to have recycled materials that reduce our need to do mining and deforestation activities and other extraction methods that results in lower greenhouse gas emissions that are climate change causing emissions, and reducing our overall impact and pressure on the natural resources we have. So we want to be able to have recovered materials rather than needing to extract new materials, which is so much more intensive of a process. And it's also better for communities. More recycling means less incineration and landfilling, which has been burdened disproportionately by certain communities, largely communities of color, lower income communities. So recycling has been another process to urge and push forward as a solution so that we don't have to rely so much on these more linear disposal methods that don't have as much benefit for the environment and can negatively impact communities.
And as far as where it goes and what is done with it, I want to get into, you talk about two different ideas of recycling, one where we separate out everything into separate bins, and then the other one, I think it's called single stream, where we just put all recyclables in one place. That has its advantages. We don't have a lot of bins and a lot of sorting, but it causes certain problems with the stuff we're hoping to recycle. What happens?
Absolutely. So single stream has become the most common recycling method for our curbside recycling programs. And exactly as you said, it's all in one bin. It requires no sorting on the part of the resident. And that has resulted in more participation because it's easier for folks to participate, which is great. But it's also resulted in high contamination. So we have issues with folks putting in things that are coated in food or beverage. So that's sort of like a cleanliness issue of our recyclables. But when you've got, you know, an orange juice container with a little bit of liquid left and you put it in with your magazines, that single stream all-in-one bin can lead for that orange juice to get to your magazine and saturate it and degrade the quality and marketability of that fiber. So single stream has resulted in the increase in contamination and the lower quality recyclables that are having a really tough time in the market right now.
Talking to Beth Porter from Green America, her new book is called Reduce, Reuse, Reimagine, Sorting Out the Recycling System. A lot of your suggestions for our recycling system, Beth, take place way before we have that item hovering over the bin and trying to figure out if I should put it in or not. And I want to go back there and that it's the three-part thing, the reduce, reuse, recycle. Let's talk about the reduce part where we just use less stuff in the first place.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think we really missed out on helping people understand. You know, we wanted to spread reduce, reuse, recycle everywhere, but it's actually a hierarchy. And so we should all be looking for ways to reduce our waste first, and of course then reuse what we already have creatively, repair those items. And the actual last resort is recycling responsibly. So focusing on the reduce aspect is something we should be trying to do in our homes, but also what I urge producing companies, retailers to do is look for ways that they can reduce their waste as well, which is really a very important key here, because recycling, for all of its wonderful benefits and real measurable benefits, it doesn't erase the fact that we have a product that was produced and made that we've used, and that impact is still there. You know, recycling doesn't negate that. So focusing on the reduce and reuse, that's why those come first.
I've seen arguments that at the point of manufacturing, we should be thinking about recycling so that, and I've heard things like appliances or furniture, even buildings, building things, creating these things in a way that when their life is over, it's easier to sort out the components and recycle them or reuse
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. What I think is a big challenge in our recycling system right now is the lack of communication in some cases between producers and recyclers. So you've got producers making products or different goods that aren't always designed for recyclability, or even if they are designed for recyclability, some places it might not work for the vast majority of the United States recycling program. So it's about creating products that not only have recycled content in them so that we're closing that loop, but that are also able to be responsibly recycled in communities across the U.S. And that's something that I think producers should be doing a lot more of.
And you also offer a lot of concrete suggestions for people who use stuff, all of us, in that reduce a waste side. What kind of things do you recommend people think about to prevent, you know, to find the stuff they're throwing away or recycling and maybe just opt out of it?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a chapter in the book on the psychology of consumption and recycling, and I think we can do a lot to change our mental habits about how we consume resources and goods, because sometimes it's very automatic. You know, there's not a pause in that, you know, when we're being handed a receipt or a plastic straw, for example, or something like that. So creating more of those sort of disruptions in our daily habits is a really powerful, important step to be able to see what we're using. You know, a good first step is actually looking in our garbage can and our recycling bin, see what we're actually throwing out, and starting from there and think, okay, well, what's something that I could try and find a zero waste option for, or something that I could use to take my own jars and containers to the grocery store? Maybe I don't need that plastic bag for my broccoli and I can take my own reusable produce bag. So a lot of little kind of small 1 degree shifts that we can do in our daily lives, and just looking for those opportunities is the first step, starting to be aware of what we're consuming and the waste that we have. I think that we can often get very overwhelmed, at least I do, and I think many other people do too, about the amount of waste and consumption that we have right now, particularly in this country. But it's important to look and see what's within our control. You know, what are we throwing out in our house, and start from there with a tangible plan to try and reduce those items straight at our home.
A lot of the suggestions you make involve kind of mindset shifts, which seems hard to pull off, but you actually give a little history of recycling from the 20s through the 50s, where we went from, scrap metal and waste people, that's kind of un-American, buy new stuff. Then World War II, where recycling was this most patriotic thing imaginable. And then back to the 50s when we were, you know, flinging our plastic plates out into the lawn, basically. We can turn on a dime here, it seems like.
Yeah, we definitely have a history of shifting back and forth. And I think, you know, with the war effort, it was really a fascinating time, because you saw the scrap drives, you saw the victory gardens, and people really looking for ways to reduce waste. But we're talking about a long term here. That was a certain time period. You know, there was an end date once the war was done. There's kind of, you know, the prosperity around the corner, that hopefulness was there. But what I hope that we can do now is fundamental transformation, really, with how we use resources and how we discard them. And I think this year we've seen a huge amount of awareness that's been raised through the concerns with ocean plastic pollution and, of course, the straw phenomenon, which has surprised many environmentalists, including myself, of the popularity of how fast that movement grew. But that's an opportunity. That's a door to open and discuss how we're using waste in other ways and try and achieve that spillover behavior where we think, okay, well, now people are really thinking about the straws. We also want people to think about the cups that's coming in or the paper bag they're using, and seeing that larger chain from the decisions we make and the decisions that producers make in making these items, and how that all leads back to the environment and impacted communities.
Beth Porter is with us, Green America's Climate and Recycling Director. Her new book is called Reduce, Reuse, Reimagine, Sorting Out the Recycling System. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you put a lot of thought into recycling? Do you try to recycle stuff as much as you can? Do you get confused by the system sometimes? A lot of people do. I do. Do you try to reduce the amount of things you consume or reuse what you can? And what does your recycling system look like in your part of the state, your part of the country? Call in at 800-642-1234. And by the way, if you work in recycling yourself or a business that relies on recycled goods, love to hear from you. 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking to Beth Porter. Her new book is Reduce, Reuse, Reimagine, Sorting Out the Recycling System. You can call in at 800-642-1234. You can tell us about what recycling is like in your community. Do you find it easy to do? Do you have questions about where it all goes? Call 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Kenneth is with us in Janesville. Kenneth, hi.
Hello. Since the 1st of January, China has refused to buy any reused newspaper. And where is all these millions of tons of used newspaper been going since then?
Kenneth, thanks. Tell us about the China connection and all this, Beth.
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you, Kenneth. So just a bit of backstory that for the past few decades, we've been exporting about one-third of our recyclables. Half of that has been going to China. And yet, exactly as Kenneth said, this year, China has put forth a policy that bans our recycled materials and has put forth a very strict contamination rate of 0.5%. Previously, the bales we were sending may have had 5% contamination. So it's a pretty big turnaround. But now what we're seeing is really throughout the industry, folks are trying to find new end buyers in those new end markets. And some of those have been overseas and other parts of Asia. And also looking back towards domestic companies. And that's what they're striving for right now, is to find new end buyers that can fill the hole that this China disruption has caused. And there's a lot of tension. There's a lot of pain in the industry right now, to be perfectly honest, of trying to navigate this huge disruption. But there's also a lot of optimism. People are very hopeful and optimistic that this is going to be a huge transformation for our recycling system. And instead of relying on China to be buying our flawed items, there's a lot more emphasis going into education and cleaning up the supply of recyclables so that they're more appealing and will be purchased by domestic companies. And so that's where we're seeing, you know, the effects of China right now. And of course, it's still happening. There's still a lot of transition that's going on. Some communities are actually moving from single stream back to dual stream or multi-stream, where we see lower contamination rates there. But right now, that's the goal, is to find new end buyers for this material. So, that's unfortunately where we're at.
Kenneth,
fortunately and unfortunately, I guess I could say.
Kenneth, thanks for the call. Going out to Lydia in Richmond, Illinois. Lydia, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to bring up, Lydia?
My question is about, my service does only offer, you know, all your recyclables in one bin. And I just wanted to know if you had any advice as to what I could do to make those recyclables more useful, or if there's another avenue I should take outside of that service to make sure my recyclables are being put into the right places.
That's a great question. Yeah, we're saying clean, empty, and dry. You know, these are the things we should be striving for with our recyclables. So we don't have to clean our recyclables perfectly. They don't need to look brand new, but they shouldn't be dripping with food or beverage. That's a big one. And another huge piece is just knowing what is your local recycling rules and what your local facility accepts and doesn't accept, and sticking with those rules. And if you have a question about that, a great resource is Earth 911. You can go and enter in any item that you're trying to recycle in your zip code, and they'll advise for the best steps for how you can recycle it. Because sometimes an item might not be recyclable in your single stream curbside program, but there might be a drop-off location near you where you can take that item, so you can still make sure it's getting in the recycling stream. And making sure that things are emptied out and not contaminated with food is a big one. That's really huge. So if you make sure to do that, that's actually a big difference and very helpful in ensuring that contamination is down, the quality of your recyclables up, and that makes them more marketable.
Lydia, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Beth Porter. Her new book is Reduce, Reuse, Reimagine. Back to your calls now. Mark is on the line in Bloomer. Mark, hello.
Hey there, friend. My wife and I, due to my job, have been moving all over the state of Wisconsin, primarily northeast Wisconsin and northwest Wisconsin, and we've chosen to live mostly rural. And we're willing to drive our recycling into the local recycling center, but I know the majority of my rural neighbors, they will not. You can put your trash to the curb, but you cannot put your recycling to the curb, and you know where they're going to put their recycling. They're not driving it into town.
Mark, thanks a lot for the call. And in a lot of rural places around the country, Beth, I imagine there's not that curbside pickup. Are there community efforts to say, okay, we'll get everybody in this square mile or so together and try to work together to cart the stuff over?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a great point. And I mean, throughout recycling's history, we've seen community come together and fill that need where there weren't recycling pickup options. And sometimes it was a great example is Recycle Here, I believe in Detroit. And they just put out a sign and said, Recycle Here. And once a month, people brought their recyclables and a few community members were willing to truck the recyclables in. And it really helped for the community members to have that centralized space. I believe also this was shared in schools, so kids go home and say, we have to recycle, and got the parents to make sure they were dropping off their recyclables at this kind of informal drop-off station, really. So there are those kinds of grassroots efforts that I think are great and really inspiring that people do. I guess I would also ask of your neighbors, you know, what's the barrier for them? Is it just that there's not a curbside service? And is there some sort of like community effort that can show the demand for a curbside service? This doesn't have to be a community run initiative that operates in perpetuity, of course, unless someone wants to do that. But just to show that there's a demand out there for recycling in this part of your county, that can be a huge indicator to a local government that they need to expand their recycling services because they're going to be getting materials from it and that folks want it to be there. So there are different ways to express demand. We need to express demand, of course, in the purchases we make to try and buy recycled content items, but we can also express demand for better recycling services, more transparency from our local government. Town hall meetings are a great way to do that. Going and expressing that you need expanded service. Not everyone has access to this. We want recycling to be accessible for everyone. And if the barriers are logistical, keeping someone from participating rather than ideological, that's a great question to ask and start from there to see how much interest there is in your community in recycling if that opportunity were there.
Thanks for calling in and sharing your story. Gary is with us now in Decorah, Iowa. Gary, hi. What did you want to bring up?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. This has been great too, by the way, but most of this has been front-end oriented is how I would word it, and I'm kind of wondering, are there new technologies coming down the pike as far as the processing of our recyclables to make that maybe not necessarily energy efficient, but more profitable, lower those costs, and make it more usable for most people? So I'll hang up, and thanks again for this.
High-tech sorting of our recyclables, Beth.
That is a wonderful question. That's definitely one of the solutions that folks in the industry are striving for right now, is more increased efficient sorting machinery. So there are companies that provide the machines that sort a lot of our recyclables, particularly in these single stream programs. The end result is a MRF. That's a material recovery facility. And those buildings hold giant, sophisticated machines that are able to separate out our paper fibers from our plastics, and then each kinds of plastic, and using giant magnets for metals. I mean, they're really cool, honestly. If you live near a MRF, I highly recommend anyone go and take a tour of these facilities, because they're fascinating. But there's constantly research and striving for innovation to make these machines improved in efficiency and also the sophistication of them, to make sure that they're able to catch all of the very different materials we're seeing entering the stream, all the different plastics and things of that nature. Now, the one challenge is that this requires investments, obviously. So the MRF needs to be able to improve their machines and adapt to this, you know, kind of cutting edge technology to make sure that their sorting capabilities are matching that. So I think we're going to be seeing, hopefully, more and more investment in recycling infrastructure to make sure that we're able to sort and process these materials efficiently and effectively.
Thanks for that call. And Beth, we'll leave it there for now. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. This is great. I loved having all the questions. And folks can reach out at bethrecycles.com if they have more questions. I love to talk about this stuff.
Wonderful.
So thank you.
Thanks so much. And thanks for all your calls. Beth Porter is Green America's Climate and Recycling Director. We've been talking about her new book. It's called Reduce, Reuse, Reimagine, Sorting Out the Recycling System. There is still time for you to share your stories. You can tweet us at Central Time or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. What is recycling like in your community? Is there something that confuses you, or is maybe a barrier that keeps you from recycling, or something that you think works really well and you're glad it works that way? Or if you work in a business that is directly involved in recycling or relies on recycled products, tell us your story on the Ideas Network Facebook page.